Welcome to another talk from the Aspen Audio Library. Eloise Bale is a professor of English and associate dean of the Honors Program at Brigham Young University. Sister Bale filled a mission to France, and from 1973 to 1978, she served on the general board of the Young Women. Her one-woman show, Aunt Patty Remembers, is based on the life of the Mormon pioneer and women's leader, Patty Bartlett Sessions. This performance was given at Brigham Young University.
The year is 1865. We are in Sessions Settlement, Utah, a short distance north of Salt Lake City. In time, the settlement will be called Bountiful. Patty Bartlett Sessions, age 71 and known as Mother Sessions or Aunt Patty to the Saints, has come up from her home in the city to deliver yet one more child. To this pioneer midwife, all births are special events, but this one particularly so, for it is yet one more child of her own son, Peregrine Sessions, nicknamed PG and an important church leader. Eventually husband to eight women, PG founded Sessions Settlement and is busy populating the area, managing several farms, and leading the saints in their work of building the kingdom in the state of Deseret, as they prefer to call it. He has brought his mother to oversee the birth, or, as the standard expression went, to put the woman to bed with a child.
I declare that road up from Salt Lake gets dustier every year. What in thunderation is all this? What are the passel of you folks doing here? Good gracious, this looks like a Sessions family reunion. Mercy on us, you'd think this was Peregrine Sessions' first time to be a father. Instead of, what is this one? 25? 30? 35? Well, of course I'm only funning. Grandma knows how many children she has. Indeed, she does. I don't lose track, not of one of my cherubs. You know that's what they called it that very first year in the Deseret News? They put that right in the newspaper. They said that in one row of eight houses, midwife Patty Sessions put seven mothers to bed in a single week. Put that right in the newspaper. So quit acting like this is the first soul I've welcomed into the world. It's a far cry from the first. A far cry. And if the good Lord's willing, it'll be a far cry from the last. What's that? Oh, the cane. Oh, no. Don't fret about that. No, I had a fall, a month or so ago. Put me on crutches for a bit. But thank the Lord for faith and the power of the priesthood. Mr. Perry come up. Now, Osiris, don't you make a face. He may not be your grandpa, but he's a good man and my husband for the time being, if not for eternity. You know, the here and the hereafter are two different kettles of fish, eh? And I'm hoping they smell a little different, too. I say, Mr. Perry come up and lay hands upon my head and told me that I would be healed before nightfall, and so I was. So I was. I lay by my crutches and got right out in my garden that very hour. Thank the Lord. Well, I always said turnabout is fair play. What turnabout? Well, don't you remember back in December, Mr. Perry was taken real sick, and he called upon me to heal him, to lay hands upon him. So Harriet and I went, yes, yes, Martha, and yes, well, second wife or no second wife, Harriet and I get along quite well now. So let's just let that business be the way Brigham Young says to do. I say, Harriet and I went down to Mr. Perry We lay hands upon him, I anointed him, and he was healed instantly. Thank the Lord, we could have lost him right there. But here I am going on, and I haven't even told you the news. And I have news, I have. Now, Emmerett, can you put that baby down? Why don't you give that baby to one of your big gals to take outside so you can sit down a minute? And where are the sisters? Mary! Lucine, can you come in here a minute, please? I especially want all you sister wives to hear this news. Thank you. Thank you. Now, what's the date today? That's right, April 16th. April 16th, 1865. Well, last night I was to home just weaving away like 60, trying to finish those carpets for your Aunt Sylvia, and watching a big kettle of red plum jam just boiling away on the stove, when along comes Sister Wilson to pay a call. Now, you remember Sister Wilson. You know she was 83 years old yesterday. My, she looks so spry and smart in her new Delaine dress. Oh, but I'm getting off the trail. She had news that had just come over the wire, just heard it coming by the telegraph office. Now, prepare yourselves for a shock. The President of the United States is dead. Yes, ma'am. Shot he was whilst he sat in the theater. Think of that. Abraham Lincoln is dead. Well, I do not know. Nor does anyone else in the city. We shall have to wait for more news. But I can tell you that the elders had a good bit to say about the assassination this morning in church. Oh, I don't know. At times like this, we know we were blessed to just leave the United States altogether and get away from all of that kind of thing and come out here and build up Zion in the tops of the mountains. Well, of course, the joke is we didn't get away from that sort of thing, did we? No, sir. The U.S. of A. has to send an army clear out here to torment and hector us. Yet one more time, Aunt Patty had to pick up and run. Not so far that time, though. Just 30, 40 miles down into Utah Valley. Oh. Heap big puff of smoke that was for no fire at all. Not one shot fired. But we were prepared. We were prepared to burn every last stick rather than let General Johnson's hordes have one thing. Would have burned it right to the ground. But we didn't. And I got back to the city in time to hack away at the weeds that thought they had gotten a head start in my absence. Oh, here I am running on again, and we were talking about the president. God rest his soul. Well, Abraham Lincoln weren't the first man to be assassinated in the United States, and I sadly fear he will not be the last. I sadly fear. Now, you little ones, who can tell Grandma what other great man, yes, greater even than the President of the United States, what other great man was shot down by an assassin's bullet? Now, who can tell me? That's right, Cyrus, right as rain. Our very own Prophet Joseph Smith, shot down in his prime by a cold-blooded killer with paint on his face. He and his dear brother Hiram, as they stood in Carthage jail. Oh, that was a dark time, but Joseph Smith was a man of God as sure as the Lord made purple plums. I'll say. Oh, yeah. What's that? Did I know Joseph Smith? Well, I should say so. Why, the darkest days we ever knew. Yes, darker than them weeks coming across the plains. Worse than that, we were cheered on by Joseph himself. Like us, a victim of the world's misery and evil. I'll say I knew Joseph Smith. What's that? Tell about meeting Joseph Smith. Well, let's see. The Saints had been doing very well in Missouri. Too well to suit the Gentiles. Too well to suit the governor, Mr. Lilburn W. Bonds. We had gotten very numerous, you see, and very powerful politically. And that made the Gentiles nervous. So you know what he did, Governor Boggs? He issued his famous extermination order. Yes, sir. The governor of the great state of Missouri, sworn to uphold the Constitution of the U.S. of A., issues an order November 1838, I believe, declaring open season on the Mormons. Said we were to be driven from the state or exterminated. Exterminated, his very word, as though we were prairie dogs or gophers or something. Oh, I was so mad I could have spit tacks. Well, dead of winter, 1839, here they come, a mob, yelling and a-screeching down the lane, shooting, burning where they could, and your grandpa and I knew it was a matter of life or death. Life or death, because down to the blacksmith shop, in fresh-made white pine coffins, lay the bodies of some of our friends already slain in the Hans Mill Massacre. I guess you know that name. They were there waiting for the ground to thaw so they could be buried. So when that hellish mob come a-shrieking and a-wailing down the lane, we knew they meant business. They, what? What's that, Cyrus? Fight? Well, of course your grandpa wanted to fight. And your pa, too, and he would have done it if we hadn't grabbed him. But that would have just ended in a quick massacre. No, sir. No, we were among the lucky ones. We got out, our skins intact and unroasted. We ducked down through the frozen creek bed at night, stumbling along in the dark, our lungs on fire inside of us, running just as fast as we could. Then all of a sudden up ahead, we saw a torch. Ah, oh, Lord have mercy. Was it another mob? Who do you think it was? No, ma'am, not the mob. It was more saints like us run out of their homes. Why, by the time we got to the river, there was a whole company of us. But we couldn't stop because the mob was still behind us. We could hear their shooting. We could see their torches. So we kept a-going. 14 days we kept a-going into the snow with the wind howling like some poor mother in travail. 14 days. And all we had to eat in that time was just a little bit of seed corn. Just a handful of parched seed corn. You know how hungry you get by sundown on fast day? Well, you think about 14 fast days in a row. No, I decided right then and there that if we got out alive, my family was never going to be hungry again, not if I could do anything about it. Now, maybe you've wondered why Grandma has the finest orchards and the finest gardens in all of Salt Lake Valley. Now, I am not boasting. You know that everybody comes by my lot, says the same thing. Well, now you know why. 14 days without food. In the end, 15,000 saints were driven out. 50 killed outright. Hundreds of others dying of the cold and the exposure. Yes. Two of our company, two little babes that I had brought into the world less than a year before. Sometimes even now, at night before I go to sleep, I see their little faces before me all pinched and blue. Well, Anyway, we crossed the river and headed up to Nauvoo toward the rest of the saints. And then who do you think we meet on the road but Joseph Smith himself, escaped from jail with his men. Nothing could have cheered us up more. And we made all of one company and we marched up to Nauvoo together. We swapped stories and we sang the hymns. And there was Joseph in the middle of us with a smile and a handshake and a kind word for everybody. Oh, 6 foot tall, good to look at. Natural born leader, that was Joseph Smith. I'll say I knew Joseph Smith. I thought a lot about Joseph. All those weeks and weeks on the plains coming across when things got so bad. And I'd say to myself, Patty, I'd say, at least you're free. And in the company of the saints and eating your own good biscuits and gravy. Not like poor Joseph in the winter of 39, in jail, sleeping on boards, eating prison food, hectored day and night by low life guards. I'll say I knew Joseph Smith. And that wasn't the end of my connection with him either. Maybe I'll say no more about that. Well, it looks like it's about time for our little mother in the next room to have a nice hot cup of Brigham tea to help her along. Sedina, Dolly, would you run on into the pantry? You'll find some herbs there that I left. Make up a nice, strong cup of tea and take it into your auntie, will you, dear? Thank you so much, Dolly. Thank you. Now, David, would you quit carrying on about my cane? I'm just fine. Oh, I have had my share of ailments in my life, but the Lord has blessed me to get over them very quickly. Yes, thanks be for faith. Why, I can dance just as much at ease now as I could when I was a young woman. Here I am at 71 with my children and my children's children. Do you know anybody who danced as much as your grandma at the Christmas party? No, you do not. No, you do not. Well, I have always loved to dance. I have to admit that. I've always been ready to dance. did I ever tell you about the time I took dancing lessons at age 59? Well, let's see. If I was 59, that would have made it 18 and 52. They were given lessons down to the Bowery in the evening, and I went along. Now, think of that. Here I was, working all day in the garden, planting the beans and the rutabagas and the tomatoes and the corn and the wheat that Mr. Jim Bridger said wouldn't grow, and taking care of the fruit and bottling fruit and cooking and cleaning and taking in boarders and making candles and soap and I don't know what all. And I still had to get up and go to take dancing lessons at 59. Imagine that. What's that? Oh, now don't be foolish. Now stop that. Stop that. You don't want to see Grandma dance now, don't you? Now stop that. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Oh, all right. I will show you 2-3 steps just to prove that Grandma does not tell stories. Now, you remember this little song, I'm sure. Oh, dear. Let's see. Here we go. Put your little foot right out. Take a turn to the left. Take a turn to the right. Take a turn all about. And we'll dance through the night. Well, I'm not 59 anymore. But I can still dance. Still remember what we learned at dance in school. Oh, that was a wonderful year. That was the spring that they dedicated the tabernacle. Yes, And we had that grand April conference. Oh, what a conference that was. And that was the first time there was any public preaching on the principle of plural marriage. Brother Pratt, that was. Woo, if that didn't stir up a hornet's nest back east. My. Well, that about led to the Utah War, of course, but we weren't thinking of any war at that time. We were enjoying April conference. Oh, the Lord poured forth his spirit, and the choir sang, and there was speaking in tongues. Now, I've had a lot of experience in speaking with tongues. Well, I'll say no more about that. But it was just a grand occasion, and I knew right then that the tabernacle would stand till the millennium, and that choir would be singing come the year 1952 and the year 2000 and beyond. Oh, my. Wonderful times, wonderful. Oh, but here I am a-rattling on, and I haven't given any of you a chance to talk. Now, what's the news up here? What's the news here? Mary Elizabeth, stand up. Let Grandma see that dress. Is that new? Turn round. You make that, Martha Ann? That's very pretty and practical. Now, that reminds me, that self-same spring that we had the dedication of the tabernacle, why, a group of us met down to the schoolhouse to design a new fashion, a new female fashion to replace those tight-waisted, pulled-in dresses we were wearing at the time. Why, I don't know a farmer alive that would cinch a horse the way we were cinched in at that time with hickory and whalebone. Why, it got so a woman couldn't draw a full breath. And I know what I'm talking about as a medical woman. Why, every place you go, people were fainting. You go to a picnic like the grand one up at Ensign Peak, 400 or 500 people, and women would faint all over the place, right in the dust. Go to the play, and it'd have to be stopped more than once so some poor sister could be helped out to the lobby. Go to your meetings on Sunday and flop. Women fainting all over the place. Well, it got so that I never traveled without my smelling salts. Not for myself, but for everybody else. So we met down to the schoolhouse to design a better fashion, more conducive to health. And we did that. And I'll bet there are women here today who've never even sniffed smelling salts, and you ought to be grateful. Now, I know there's a picture. Yes, here's the picture. Now, there's a picture of me in that new fashion. Now, isn't that smart? Now, that's fashion without the foolery. Fashion without the foolery. Yes. Oh, now come to think of it, that picture reminds me, that was the same summer, Martha, wasn't it, that your father went on his first mission to England. I'm sure it was, yes. Well, he only had four wives and, 10, 12 children. I reckon the brethren thought he was a bachelor. Oh, but we had a grand meeting before he left. He called all of his family together, every one of them, and he blessed all of his children, and he blessed me, then I blessed him, then he and I together blessed David, and there was speaking in tongues, and I interpreted, because that's something that Joseph Smith taught us, that there wasn't to be any speaking in tongues unless somebody was there to translate so all could get the good of it. Oh, that was a grand occasion. That was a grand occasion. Well, speak of the devil in any dances. Hello, son. What? No news yet. Now, you sit down. Now, that baby has a timetable of his own, and he's not like one of your horses that you can snap at with a whip and speed up. No, sir. You just sit down there. Why don't you? One of you gals get your pa a nice hot cup of tea. That's a good idea. Thank you. What, Cyrus? Don't I wish it were real tea? No, you young scamp, I do not wish it were real tea, though I have drunk barrels of tea in my day. Yes, yes, and coffee too, that's right. And other things if it comes to that. Yes, yes. But the word of wisdom is our rule now, and I aim to follow it as straight as an arrow and reap the blessings therefrom. As a matter of fact, I am already reaping the blessings. Do you know how much money I had when we first came into the valley? Now, who can tell Grandma when that was? When was it that the saints very first came into the valley? Now, I know you know. What was the year? Come on, tell me. Now, somebody here remembers when the saints first came into the valley.
1847.
That's right, 1847. Well, how much cash money do you think I had when we first came into the valley? No, ma'am, not $100. No, not so much as $1. I had a 5-cent piece, a 5-cent piece. And today, I have a goodly sum invested in ZCMI. Mm-hmm. I always knew that mercantile would prosper. First department store west of the Mississippi. Yes. What's that, Cyrus? How much money do I have? Never you mind, son. Never you mind. But you must know that you'll never be left without a nickel to your name. That's what I say. And I say, thanks be to God. Thanks be to God. He has blessed us. He took away Missouri, but he gave us all of Deseret. And he took away Joseph, but he gave us Brigham. And he took 6 of my babies, lying now in the good farm earth of Illinois. But look what he gave me to comfort my old heart. And I say, thanks be to God. Thanks be to God. Just think of the words of Brother Clayton's song. Just think of the words of that song. I know you know them. In fact, why don't you come along and sing them with me and remember our blessings. We'll find a place which God for us prepared, far away in the west, where none shall come to hurt or make afraid. There the saints will be blessed. And blessed we have been. And I hope you can all say with me, thanks be to God. What's that, Cyrus? How did I get the money to invest? Why, any way I could, son, any way I could. Now, your grandpa, Mr. Sessions, for one thing, he brought across the prairies fruit trees with their roots all wrapped up in wet seaweed to keep them alive. We planted the fruit trees. We sold fruit. We sold fruit trees. We sold bottled fruit. Grew the wheat. Took in boarders. Tended the garden. Why, some days I worked so hard that every bone and muscle in my body ached and I could not sleep at the nightfall. Many a Sunday I stayed home to protect my garden against poachers. You know, you know that the scripture says someplace that sometimes you have to work on the Sabbath to get the ox out of the mire. Well, I had to work on the Sabbath many a time to keep my garden out of the admiring hands of those little thieves. Oh, I developed my own strain of plum tree. You look right out that door there out in your yard. You can see 6 session plum trees. Why, I did everything I could. Took in boarders, yes, took in boarders. Sometimes I got paid. Sometimes I didn't. I remember one fella that stayed the night, name of Dixon. never said a word of thanks for his lodging, his dinner, or his breakfast, and he left live vermin in the bed. Yes, ma'am, live vermin. I would have been well paid, for there were two kinds if they'd been coppers and cents. Oh, I don't know. Now, there are those who took to saying that Aunt Patty was a sharp one in a deal. And maybe I was. But you can march right up to Brigham's office in the Lion House any day you want and ask if I did not give food and clothing many a time to help the needy that came by later. Gave food, gave clothing, gave money, gave a team of oxen on one occasion to help the later companies. I'll say. Why, I was in the tabernacle that Sunday in the fall when word come that the handcart companies were stranded out in the passes. Little families with all their worldly goods heaped in a cart that they had pulled by hand all those thousands and thousands of miles, not a mule or a horse to their name. And now they were within sight of the tops of the mountains, but too weak to press on. Well, when we heard that news in the tabernacle, we women, we made a big circle, and on the inside of that circle, all tight, we stripped off our warm stockings, and we stripped off our jackets, and our sweaters, and our scarves, yes, and our petticoats, too. And we heaped a wagon bed full of warm clothing. And then we heaped another wagon bed with potatoes and flowers and beef. And that was the end of meeting that day. We were not about to sit there with our hands folded while there were folks out in the pass suffering. That was not Brigham's way. And it wasn't mine. It wasn't mine at all. Well. My goodness, look at all these beautiful children and grandchildren. Yes, I see the grandchildren. A prize crop indeed. And the one that's on its way will be a beauty too, mark my words. You know, I'm something of an expert on babies, I am. I've seen a few in my day. Yes, indeed. How many? How many do you think after more than 50 years? I suppose you think I've lost track after all that time. I don't lose track. I keep track of every piece of fruit on my tree, every penny in the bank, and every soul that I bring into the world. And after 50 years, that's a heap of souls. Do you know, Sedina, I was just your age the very first time I put a woman to bed. Just 16. And who do you think that woman was? My very own mother, yes. We lived way out in the woods of Maine, and the doctor hadn't come. Well, it was bitter cold. It was terrible weather. And I wanted to run for a midwife. Now, Mother was a midwife. And she knew that it was too late for that. And she said, I must do it, and she would tell me what to do. Well, now it was bitter cold, and the frost was painting pictures on the window panes, but I was drenched. I was that nervous. But I did what I had to do. And when the doctor came the next day, he said that he couldn't have done any better himself. And Mother said that I had a talent and I must set my course. So the next year, I set out and went away to the city to take training as a midwife. And that was the beginning. That was the beginning, and I'm still doing it more than 50 years later. Oh, I'll tell you the stories I could recount. But you've heard enough of Grandma's stories, haven't you? Well, you haven't. Tell more stories. Oh, well. Well, let's see. I had a case a few years back that involved Brigham Young himself. Yes. Yes, indeed. Oh, this was 8, 9 years ago, and Sister Rhodes was in trouble. Bad trouble. But she wouldn't have a doctor, would not have one. Said she had been butchered by this Dr. Vaughn. Well, 3 of us midwives were there. We put our heads together, tried to help her, but nothing was of any avail. Long about midnight, the child's arm was born, but that was all. Well, when that happened, we put out a call for the doctor. We sent for the elders. We even asked for Brigham Young himself. He was nowhere to be found. Next morning, her pain started in again, very bad. No doctor, no Brigham. And by evening, she passed away, poor soul. Well, the next day, the doctor come, of course, and because things had been so strange, they opened her up. And they found that the child had made a rupture on the left side and was clear outside the womb, so, of course, could not get born. Well, they sewed her up again and buried her on Saturday with the child in her arms. But that wasn't the end of it. Because it had been so strange, everybody was talking about it. That's all they did. Talk, 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 talk. Everybody had his own theory. If the midwives had done this, if the doctor hadn't done that, if the woman herself had done thus and so, well, by Sunday, Brigham had had enough of that, and he got up in the pulpit, and he said he had looked into the whole matter on all sides, and there was no blame to be laid anywhere, and he did not want to hear another word about it. Amen. Well, I was grateful for that powerful talk because I was very heavy in my heart. Very heavy at the sad goings on. I don't believe I put another woman to bed for many weeks. Now, in another case, the baby was born dead and the mother was very near to death. But she was peaceful in her mind. And she said to me, she said, Mother Sessions, I thank you for all that you have done. I know I shall meet you in heaven and hail you with joy. And then she passed away, poor soul. Oh, I don't know what I haven't seen or suffered, especially coming across the plains. Oh, if that wasn't a testing time. And I was no spring chicken. I was 53 when we set out. Oh, and Mother Nature threw everything she could at us. Wind so bad it took 7 men to hold the tent down. Mud up to the belly of the horse. Terrible heat. Horrible cold. Oh, still think of how cold it was. Still feel the cold in my wrists and my elbows. Oh, still feel how painful it was to try to chop wood in below 0 temperatures. Oh, I've always... Now, I have worked like a nailer all my life, but I have always hated to chop my own wood. I was looking here in my journal just the other day for the day that I married Mr. Perry. What, Cyrus? Yes, of course that was after your grandfather died. You didn't have plural husbands, you know. And I wrote in the journal, today I married Mr. John Perry. I am grateful for someone to chop my wood. Not very romantic, is it, girls? Oh, but we were talking about coming west. Oh, what a testing time that was. Oh. Oh, I remember one April, I was called out before the sun came up. Down come the snow as we rode out, mud up to the flanks of the horse. Went back to this poor woman, and I found out that she had ridden 14 miles on horseback after her labor had started. Now you think about that. 14 miles on horseback. And then when she got to the river, why, the floods had washed out the bridge, and how was she to get across? Well, I'll tell you. They got a log, and she straddled the log with the babe in her arms, and they pulled the log across the river. Now you think of that. Oh. Sick. Sick. We were all sick. One time or another. On the banks of the Missouri River, I lay on the floor for 30 days, unable to write in my journal, to get dressed, to rise from my bed. The doctor said it would be a miracle if I survived, and I was prepared to go. I had given them instructions about my grave, told them to mark down the longitude and the latitude, told them to fortify the grave with good, stout cedar posts, protected against the wild creatures. And I was peaceful in my mind and ready to go. Then along come Brigham Young to the bedside, and he said to the family standing by and to the friends, he said, "Now, people, I want you to hold on to Mother Sessions just as long as she breathes. And for 15 minutes after she stops breathing, because we need her, we must have her." Commenced to get better that very hour. 2 days later, I was well enough so that Sister Young could take me for a ride in her little carriage out across the plains. What a comfort that was, to be in the company of an understanding sister and to breathe the fresh air. Oh, we all needed comfort for one thing and another, dearie. I don't know how we stood it. And then Rosella, on top of all that, Rosella, well, she was the other wife, the first other wife. Never could call her sister wife. Well, we didn't know how to live the principle then, the way you sister wives do today. But, I knew that one would never last. I watered my pillow many a night over Rosella, and not long on the trail, it just got too difficult, and she picked up her skirts and turned about and went right back over the river, and that was the end of that story. Oh, I'll tell you what was a real comfort, though. Those meetings. Those women's meetings. 2 or 3 times a week, we'd meet in somebody's tent or somebody's wagon. Time and again, they called upon me to preside, and so I did. Oh, the spirit of those meetings. A foretaste of glory. We read Sister Eliza Snow's poetry. We sang the hymns of Zion. We blessed one another. We healed one another. We prophesied. We were lifted up, and the miseries of the trail dropped away. Dropped away, I say. Yes. What's that, Daniel? Did we see Indians? What, does a seagull eat crickets? But we didn't fight them if we didn't have to, because Joseph taught us that the Indians were descendants of the Lamanites from the Book of Mormon times, and that we were to be friends with them if we could. And so we were. Why, they fought more often amongst themselves to see who'd get the most provisions from us than they ever fought with us. No, I remember one time I was sitting in camp writing a letter to my mother, I believe. In rides this young Indian woman bareback on a horse with an arrow clear through her arm. She'd come to us for help, you see. And things were so bad, we had to take the arm right off. And all the time we were doing that, she never uttered a peep, brave woman that she was. Oh, no, we suffered a lot more at the hands of the U.S. Army than we ever did from the Indians. And we kept a-going. Kept a-going. On the banks of the Platte River, we lined up one day, five wagons abreast, rank behind rank. And in that front rank, right in the middle, there was the Nauvoo temple bell and the cannons on each side and the flag of liberty fluttering in the breeze. My, we were a sight to look at that day. And I believe we made 15 miles that day. 15 miles! And that Nauvoo temple bell has a place of honor in the city to this day, doesn't it? Well, then come the Rocky Mountains. My, they loomed big. Mother Nature had thrown everything she could at us. Wind and snow and sickness and heat and cold, and now the mountains. Oh, going up, we had to put poles behind the wagons to keep them from crashing down backward. Going down to the other side, why, we had to tie ropes on them and wrap those ropes around trees up above and lower them little by little so they wouldn't crash down and smash to bits and break people's legs in the middle of it. Oh. But on the 24th of September, 1847, we made it into the valley. There was the Pioneer Company to greet us. What a reunion that was. We had made it all safe. I had walked at the yoke 1,030 miles. I had driven that yoke every step of the way except for the last two passes that your father drove. We were all safe. 2 days later, I put Sister Harriet Page to bed with the sun. 5 months before that, it had been prophesied to me by one of my sisters that mine would be the first hands to hold the firstborn male born to the saints in the city of God, in the tops of the mountains, in the kingdom of the Lord. And it all came to pass just exactly as it was prophesied. And that's not the end of it either, because Aunt Patty Sessions is not through yet. Not by a long shot. Not by a long shot.
This concludes Eloise Bell's performance of Aunt Patty Remembers. For a list of other tapes in the Aspen Audio Library, write to Aspen Books, P.O. Box 21055. Salt Lake City, Utah, 84121.